Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is. All right, thank you. Thank you so much, and welcome everybody. Oh, wow, must be feeling good. Welcome everybody to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I just heard a funny joke, so that's why I blurted out laughing like that. So I'll tell you about it later on. But anyway, thanks for tuning into the show. Thanks for downloading and archiving the show. Thank you for all your good responses and good feedback to the show. And that's always great. That's always great because it keeps me on the air. Anytime you say something nice, even if you say something negative about the show, I learn from that. So I'd rather have positive feedback, but if you just can't help yourself, then you just have to give me negative feedback. Make sure it's constructive negative feedback. All right, listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show broadcasting live out of Chicago, Illinois. It is great. It's wonderful. Daylight saving time is coming up, and I just can't wait. I mean, the days are going to be longer. I'm going to be out here enjoying the sunshine. You know, you got to do those things because that helps sometimes. Helping you to think, I think positive, you know what I'm saying? To think positive. And make sure you follow me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn, Google. Where else am I? We have a great show for you. So you guys stick around for that, and I will be right back. We don't have any commercials on this show. Isn't that great? And all you can, you know, you can't even get a sense of what the show is about. There's so many damn commercials. You know what I'm saying? A lot of commercials, and there's none on this show unless I make them up myself. But you know what? Maybe in the coming months or years, maybe I'll get a sponsor here or two or there. But so far, there's no commercials on the show, and I will be right back. Stay with me, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. All right, we're back. I told you there's no commercials. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. This show is so much fun to do. I just can't wait to get on the air. I've been off for 3 days. And usually this show goes from Monday through Thursday, and Friday, Saturday, and Sunday I have off because I have other things to do. I have a life. Actually, what I do, I write. I do a lot of writing whenever I'm not on the show. And I'm also a parent, as you probably know, so you have to do those kinds of things. So, but I'm on Monday through Thursday, 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, sometimes longer, depends on the clientele. All right, you're listening to the show. It should be a great show today. I'll figure out something to try to get through the show. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, WTTTY on Block Talk Radio. I barely use call letters, but I made them up myself. What can I swear? What can I say? All right, 347-857-1762. That's the number if you want to call in and chime in and talk, if you want to sit, or if you just want to sit back and listen to the show, that's fine. That's all right. That's all fine and good. But always make yourself known and heard when you listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, because if you listen to this show, if you miss the show, you miss a lot, because I pour a lot into these shows, and it's fun. It's very fun. You got to, whatever you do, you have to have fun at it. You got to enjoy it. That what makes it fun, and that what, and making it fun will have you to continue to do those things. All right, let's go to our phones. We see we have a caller here. You on the George Wilder Jr. Show, go right ahead.
Hello.
You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
You can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you quite loud and clear.
Okay.
There are
at least two people I think are supposed to be. Are you Marcy Pratt or Marie Pratt?
We're the authors. Winona Marie, Alexis Rose, and J.D.
Okay,
Shelby,
great.
And J.D.
Okay, so
the authors of the book.
I'm speaking to two or three people.
Yeah, three people.
Wow.
I'm Winona Marie.
All right, tell us something about yourself. Tell us something about the book, or you know.
And you are. I'm J.D.
and I'm Shelby.
And Daisy together
and Shelby?
We wrote, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Winona Marie speaking. And together we wrote the book, And I Thought Divorce Was Bad, with Other Life Lessons.
Oh, okay.
And we also
have
two other authors who weren't able to be here today, Lynn Dove and Alexis Rose. They weren't able to be here today, so, you know, they're always going to send their regrets and best wishes.
Their regrets.
Well.
All right.
Hey, it's a positive. It's not a negative thing, right?
Okay. Right. Exactly. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about the book. Tell us about what you do and why people should pay attention to you.
Well, our book is mostly 10 life lessons, and we talk about everything from how to get over a bad relationship, how to stay married, stay in a relationship, how to deal with losing a loved one, when life changes, be it in beauty or in age. We talk about how to deal with all these things in 10 poetic life lessons. And we like this.
Oh, wow, that's great.
From the ages 26 to 52. So the authors, that's the ages of the authors. So we cover about 3 decades worth of experience, life experiences, and we kind of put them in 150-some pages. So you get the short version, but it packs a wallop. It definitely packs a wallop.
Okay, who is Beth Banny?
Have no idea.
Yeah, we're talking to Beth Banny people. Sorry.
We're different people here.
Oh, okay. But I'm looking at the wrong person, because I think one of you guys sent me something in the mail, and you sent me someone's BethBanning.com. If that's not you, I'm sorry. I thought I saw it on your email page.
Oh, no, that's not us. Sorry. Yeah, everything
okay.
About us.
Okay, forget it. That's no problem.
Book title
right.
related.
You're into... Go right ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, today we were talking, we actually had an interview earlier today in England, and she was talking about how the book was very nice and from the heart, and how it was definitely nice to have 3 decades worth of information that was from the heart with a theme that ran through. And we mostly talk about, like, relationships and finding ourselves as through in any situation or in any relationship, how to find yourself and move forward and continue to grow and progress.
But it's done in a form, Mrs. Shelby, done in the form of poetry and stories. So
okay,
it's kind of just
in writing this book, did you guys use any of your personal experience?
Yes, everything is personal experience. Pretty much, because always, yeah, everything came from something personal that touched each one of us, or some kind of lesson that affected us or how we learn how to get along this life or how we learn how to change how we get along this life?
That was Shelby, and this is Winona Marie, and I was going to say, I think all literature comes from someplace that is definitely real. I was just rereading through the book today because we had to send it out to one of the reviewers, and they were saying, and when I was rereading, I was like, wow, I can't believe how much of myself I put on these pages and how much of all the other authors that they have put on these pages. And it was the first time I recognized what everyone else has been saying as we've been going through our PR stuff, is that there's a lot of you on the pages, and they're like, that's got to be the hardest part, is putting your heart and your soul down in writing and then letting the world read it and then judge it. And I never saw it that way until today when I was, like, flipping through and through and through, and I was like, wow, that's what happened in my life. Wow, this is how I actually felt at that moment. It's kind of cool.
This is JD, and I was just thinking that...
Uh-huh. Yeah, so you guys, if you're talking about relationships...
Mm-hmm.
I would say if you're talking about relationships, you're talking about staying together, being together, or just hooking up and just hanging out. What are you talking about when you say relationships? You mean married or just girlfriend, boyfriend, or problems within the relationships or things like that?
Well, I'm Winona, so I've been divorced, and I was also left at the altar. Well, not exactly at the altar. It was 3 months before the wedding. So I tell you how to get over heartbreak, and be it from a long-term relationship or just, like, breaking up from a relationship. Now, Lynn Dubb, who isn't here tonight, she talks about finding the right man, finding a boyfriend, and settling down. Also finding you during the process of finding that man. Because the most important thing is once you find you, you can then find someone who complements you and matches you. Now, Shelby and JD, they're in two different places in their relationship, and they wrote about them.
Oh, this is Shelby, and I wrote from a perspective of being someone older. I'm the 52-year-old one, and I wrote from being married for many, many years and also trying to find yourself along the way, and also how to find yourself when you lose someone along the way in form of death, but not my marriage partner, a really close friend.
And this is JD, and I think that we, as a group, we wrote about our relationships, like I wrote about my relationship, but also we wrote about the most important relationship you're ever going to have in your life, the first relationship you have, which is with yourself. Because without having a good relationship with yourself, no other relationship is going to work out.
Also, the ladies...
All right, we're back. Somehow we lost the authors, and hopefully they'll come back. We lost you, girls. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I will be right back with something else.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, hopefully they'll call back, or somehow we got disconnected or the wires got tangled or something. Anyway, quarterback Peyton Manning retires. He retires. He's 39 years old, and it's great to go out a winner. That is beautiful, to go out a winner. But I think he did not go out a winner. I think he went out, he retired. He gave up $19 million, from what I'm hearing, to retire. I mean, he had a couple of scandals coming in his coming that was about on him now, doping, sexual assault back in his college days. And that could have wretched up for him to retire. You know, you never know. But anyway, he's still a winner. He's still a great football player. There's no doubt about it. Actually, I thought he had won at least 3 or 4 Super Bowls, but only 2. That's great in itself with Indianapolis and the Denver Broncos. That's great. That's good. One of the things I hated about Peyton Manning that I didn't like too much about Peyton Manning was that his every time he would be up there with Father John selling those rotten pizzas and Papa John was, he was just so treated his employees so badly. And I hated to see Peyton Manning during a game or something, a Sunday game, or you're watching television, all of a sudden you see Peyton Manning with Papa John up there selling pizzas. And I thought Peyton Manning was lowering himself was for that, because pizza, as we know, is not a healthy meal, okay? If you're going to promote something with a status like Peyton Manning, promote something that's healthy for the youth and the young people. I know. Even myself, I'll run out and get a pizza and sit down and watch a football game. It just seems like a pizza is just the right kind of a thing to have when you're watching football. But I just thought it was beneath him to do that. But even though he's retired now, I'm pretty sure you're going to see him on television and in commercials. He's going to be doing more Papa John spots and all that kind of thing. But the man is a millionaire. He comes from a family of football players. His father, Archie Manning. Don't get me wrong. If you listen to the show, this is not a sports show. I'm just talking about what's in the news here, folks. Talking about what's in the news. And Peyton Manning retired today. Wow, that's something. That's something to look forward for. Now, Denver Broncos have the tedious task of finding a capable quarterback for next season. You know, so hey, wow, my hats goes off to Peyton Manning. Great, that's wonderful. He retires, and that's good for him. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Some of my equipment is probably not up to par. I mean, I was off for 3 days, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful. Okay, college graduate, smart, broke, and unemployed. You know, I mean, is college what – I'm going to do a whole show on this. I'm going to have some guests on this show on this particular topic. Is college worth it? Is going to college and being in astronomical debt, is that worth it? 347-857-1762, if you want to chime in on if college is worth going, if it's worth it. You know, from my own opinion, if I would give my own take on it, I would probably say in some cases, yes, it is worth going to college. You know, but it's not fair to be ladled with all that debt, because I've said this on many shows. I have a few years ago, I used to see and have witnessed people with master's degrees, bachelor's degrees, PhD degrees, working at jobs that they never majored in, low paying, minimum wage jobs. And this is happening right now as I speak. And a lot of kids who are graduating from college come away from college, as you know, in super debt. They have more debt. And then they may not be able to find a job that they majored in. So they have to get a job, any job, anywhere, doing anything in order to try to pay down that debt. But I do think going to college is worth it. But because every kind of statistic there is telling you, you get paid more, your salary or your wage is going to be a lot higher if you're a college graduate, more so than you are a high school graduate. That's a fact. I mean, you may not even, let's see what I'm trying to say. Even if the job is for a high school level person, but if that employer sees college experience, college education on that resume, they're going to pay you a little bit more than they pay that high school graduate for the same job just because you have a degree and that person doesn't. So I do believe, and I will always believe, that there is a benefit to going to college. But on the offside to that, college is no guarantee of getting a good job. College is no guarantee of having a great future. There are so many people out here who with only high school degrees, they are successful, they're rich. I mean, life is good to them, and they don't even have a college degree. And then you have people with master's degrees who are making minimum wage. I do suggest, if you can, if at all possibility, get yourself some college experience. I mean, get yourself a college degree. It pays more. Simple as that. You know, it pays more. And most people look at students who graduate college as, you know, smart, you know, have some sort of smartness about them, intelligence. And that's true. That's true. So I will tell anybody anywhere, you know, if at all possible, get that college degree. You know, down the line, it's going to pay off. But like I said, the downside of not having a college degree is you're going to get paid less. And employers, they love to pay you less. And if you give them a reason to pay you less, they are going to pay you less. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTY. Okay, I have two authors on the show, but apparently they're not going to call back, but that's okay. I'm sorry, ladies, if you had a bad experience. Somebody screwed up. I don't know if it was on your end or my end. So we have to move on. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with me.
A lot of people I know think of Jehovah's Witnesses as nothing more than the religious people who sometimes knock on your door because they want to talk to you about God. And that's true. That is something they do. But they don't really know anything about Jehovah's Witnesses' beliefs. So let's fix that right now. Jehovah's Witnesses do not accept blood transfusions. Ever. Imagine you're in a car accident and you get taken to the hospital. They need to give you a blood transfusion so you can live. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, you will say no to that. Even worse, they won't allow their children to accept the transfusions. This prohibition has led to reports of Jehovah's Witnesses and their kids dying more times than I can remember. So why is this a rule? Like, where did this even come from? Jewish law forbade eating blood. And the New Testament in Acts chapter 15 verses 28-29 carried that command over into Christianity. By the way, that same passage also tells you must avoid eating meat from animals that were strangled to death. Now, obviously, most Jews will accept blood transfusions because they understand that eating blood and getting a medical blood transfusion to save your life are completely different things. But Jehovah's Witnesses don't feel that way. They are both one and the same, even if it means saving your life. If you commit what the church views as a serious sin, and a group of church elders finds you unrepentant, you will be disfellowshipped. Not just kicked out of the church, but disfellowshipped, which means no one in the church can ever talk to you ever again. By the way, that could include your family. I know former Jehovah's Witnesses who haven't spoken to their parents in years because of this rule. Basically, if you're disfellowshipped, your family could talk to you about non-church-related things, like how their grandkids are doing or something. But that's it. And when those family members are heavily invested in the church, there really isn't much stuff that's non-church-related that they can talk to you about. So once you're in the church, leaving it basically means saying goodbye to your entire life as you knew it. By the way, what are some of the serious sins that could get you disfellowshipped? Getting a blood transfusion, going to another church, using tobacco, homosexual activity, or openly disagreeing with church leadership. Oh, and not believing in God. They believe the world's ending soon, and only they will be saved. The Watchtower Society, which governs the faith, says that Jesus began ruling over earth from heaven in 1914, October 5th or 6th, to be more precise. They believe that Armageddon is happening soon, and that only those who accept Jehovah's Witness teachings will be saved. Of course, they also said all this about 1914, 1925, and 1975, so their track record for predicting the end of the world isn't very good. Oh, and in case you're wondering, there are about 8 million people who are witnesses, and like 7 billion who are not. So, odds are, you're screwed. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate their birthdays. Why? Well, for one, they think the day of your death is way more important than the day that you were born, so who cares? Also, the Bible only mentions birthdays twice, and both times someone died in the story. So clearly God's sending a sign for us to not celebrate them. Even though dogs are mentioned in the Bible dozens of times, never in a good way, but there's no prohibition in the church on having a pet. Jehovah's Witnesses don't celebrate other holidays either. They don't celebrate Christmas because that's Jesus' birthday. And like I said, they don't do birthdays. Easter? No thank you. Eggs and bunnies are just a corruption of Christianity. Thanksgiving? Forget it, it's not like Jesus celebrated Thanksgiving. Arbor Day? No, that's tree worship, and only God deserves to be worshipped. Halloween? No, obviously. Basically, there's only one holiday you're allowed to celebrate as a Jehovah's Witness, and it's the date that Jesus died, which is around Good Friday, but it's not actually Good Friday. Jehovah's Witnesses are currently governed by seven dudes. The governing body formulates doctrine for Jehovah's Witnesses around the world. Women are not allowed. They don't have any special qualifications, despite being able to set policy for millions of followers, and they're appointed for life. Jehovah's Witnesses are discouraged from getting a higher education. Preaching is supposed to be your true calling, and college would just get in the way of that. So while you might be able to get away with learning a trade, church elders actively discourage you from going to a university. They don't want you to be part of a secular world, and they know how tempting it can be when you're surrounded by people who don't feel that God is watching over them at all times. More importantly, a lot of people who go to college are taught to think critically and examine their beliefs. They take science and philosophy classes, and some of them eventually shed their faith. And that's the risk the church just doesn't want you to take. Jehovah's Witnesses were the original pledge protesters. I feel like I should say something nice about the Witnesses. The first major legal battle with the Pledge of Allegiance involved the Jehovah's Witness family in the 1930s. A little boy said he didn't want to salute the flag because his religion taught him not to bow down or pledge allegiance to anything other than God. He was expelled from school for that. And the court said that was the right decision. Years later, kids from a witness family in Pennsylvania also protested saluting the flag, and their case actually made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And the justices voted 8-1 against the family. It was a horrible decision, and it was actually reversed by the Supreme Court in another case a few years later. But Jehovah's Witnesses do deserve credit for being the first to take a stand against the Pledge of Allegiance. Today, it's usually atheists who make the news for protesting the pledge, but historically, that hasn't always been the case. They did it.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. All right, let's go back to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Yes, hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Hey.
Yeah, we got disconnected.
Oh, no. I don't know. I just called in. I was told to call in. I'm the author you were supposed to be interviewing today. It's Beth Bannon.
Okay. I had someone else call in and they got disconnected. I'm confusing the two. All right. Tell everybody who you are and talk about your book.
My name is Beth Bannon.
Okay.
And I have a new book called Interviewed by God.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All righty. I was, you know what? I was just at your website. because
yeah.
You sent me an email on Gmail, and I was just at your website, and I had two or three people on today. So.
Oh,
you know.
Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's funny because on your thing, it says Maris Paff. That's my assistant. She was calling me. I think it's supposed to have my name, but it's got her name instead. Because Maris is not coming. It's me instead. You've got me.
Okay, all right. It even confuses me because a lot of times, I'll book people for the show, and I'm thinking I'm booking the author, but I'm booking an agent, you know.
There you go.
And because a lot of times the agent or whoever is representing the author doesn't really specify the author to be on the show.
There you go. You've got me, George. You've got me, baby.
Okay. So what I'll do once the show is over, I'll make some changes onto the website.
Okay, no worries. I just figured I'd let you know who you were talking to, though.
Yeah, I know who I'm talking to. So, go right ahead. Go right ahead, Beth Batty.
Well,
go right ahead.
What do you want me to talk about? Do you have any specific things? I mean, I can read the excerpt.
I mean,
I'm prepared for that.
You can read
an
excerpt.
We'd have a conversation. So, I thought we were having
a
conversation.
You can read an excerpt, or we can talk about the book. I mean, I haven't read the book. I entered into your website. I was at your website. But you can talk about the book. You can talk about yourself. You can talk about what you think that we ought to know, because I do have an audience.
Cool. Now, are we on the air now, or is it recording?
We're on the air. We've been on the air.
Oh, cool. I didn't know. I just showed up. So here I am. We'll just start fresh. We'll start from here, George.
All righty.
All right. So anyway, my book is called Interviewed by God. And the reason it's called Interviewed by God is because, and I heard you were an author as well, so you know how very challenging sometimes when you sit down and you're all prepared to write something, and nothing comes. And so that's what happened when I was guided to write this book. I sat down and nothing came. It was like my brain was blank. And over again, day after day, I would sit down because I made this commitment to write this book. And nothing came. So
how did you deal with that?
Well, that's what I'm saying. What was really weird, too, is that I was like, I wrote blog posts and articles and courses, and I was a writer. So when I sat down and did this, how I dealt with it is I got frustrated and angry. I was like, what? You know, I was
that's
like,
one way.
There you go. But it worked for me because what happened was, what happened was this. Right before I wrote the book, I had like a spiritual awakening of sorts. And for about 2.5 years, my life was so just quiet and peaceful and everything flowed. And it was amazing. And then when I was guided to write this book, you know, I really got a very clear message internally to write my experiences of this spiritual awakening. So then when it was so difficult, so challenging, I didn't know how to like manage because my life had been so peaceful. So I started yelling like God was sitting in front of me. Hey, you know, you wanted me to write this book. And all of a sudden I heard, like kind of internally, I heard, I'll interview you. And I was like, what? I was like, interview me? What are you talking about? Interview me. And I heard, I'll ask and you answer. So what happened was, every time I got stuck, like I didn't know what to write, I heard a question inside me, this internal guidance. You know, I call it God. Some people call it the universe or your subconscious mind. I don't know. Do you know? But I call it God, this internal source that I'm connected to something bigger than myself. And so this source guided me through this process of writing my book. So that's why it's called Interviewed by God, because every time I got stuck, I heard a question and I just answered it. And that's how I wrote the book. I think it's, I'm like,
you know what? That That is smart. That is smart. Interviewed by God. That is smart. I mean, a lot of times when we writers are stuck on what we're going to write, you know, we're just stuck. And it being interviewed by God. So God was kind of just asking you questions and you would answer them.
Exactly. And then I answered them. And towards the, so God would ask me about, you know, this journey and my childhood and things that led me to my spiritual opening or expansion, as I call it. And then towards the end of the book, this whole process of actually having these conversations with God like this, it's the same process as like Neil Donald Walsh did. And, you know, so many people, you know, everybody can speak or communicate with this higher source of knowing. I mean, it's available to everybody. And so towards the end of the book, this whole thing got so fascinating for me. You know, I started asking God questions. So there's lots of...
Wow.
It was amazing, really. Just some of the, for me, like incredibly profound insights that I had never heard before, like in the spiritual circles, you know?
So yeah, God answered you.
Yes, God did. And I got all kinds of answers. I mean, I sit and I do it now. I do it in writing. Like, that's how I started. It's a really simple process. You define the name of your source of knowing. It can be really anything that you believe. If you believe that something, some higher source has answers that you don't have, whatever that name is for you, I mean, it could be your dead Aunt Sally, you know, if that's what you believe.
Yes, yes, yes.
And, you know, you can write, and all the process is you write your name, and then you put a little colon, and then you write a question, and then you quiet and then you write whatever the source is. You know, I write God and put a colon, and then I just let the answer come through me.
Oh, wow.
And then I have a whole dialogue like that.
Beth?
George? Yeah? Can you hear me?
Okay. I wanted to make sure I didn't lose you. So in this particular book where you, what is your favorite chapter in the book, if you have one?
Oh, my gosh, my favorite chapter. I think the end of it, I think it's the second. I don't have the book right in front of me, but I think it's one of the second to last chapters where I write my. I did this course with Jean Houston, and she had you write your life as a fairy tale. And I wrote a whole mythical journey of my life as a fairy tale. And it was just so much fun to write. I think that's why I like it so much, because it was just so much fun to write.
You know what? And you make a great point. I mean, I'm a writer too. I've been writing for years. And making writing fun is really fun. I mean, it has to be fun. I tell people this all the time. You cannot go into writing being mad or pissed off or anything or upset. I mean, you have to go in and
see how it goes.
I always regarded writing as therapeutic.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, it is for me too. I totally get that.
Yeah.
And especially now, have you ever written like kind of your story, like your life story? Have you ever written that?
Yeah, memoir, of course.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
But yeah, I've written it, and that was fun because. One of the reasons why I wrote it is because I thought my life was exciting enough to write a book. So I did it. You know.
There you go.
And it was. My life was exciting. If it was dull or boring, I don't think I would have written it because, you know, I don't want people to say it was dull or boring. But it was. My life was exciting. I mean, there was always something around every corner. I mean, from that age, from being a child on up to now, it was there. And people have read it, and they tell me it's pretty good. So
yeah, and it's and talk about therapeutic. Oh my gosh, you know, I read some of I really think that even people who aren't writers or don't consider themselves writers would be good off to write their story for themselves, if not for anybody else, but for themselves. And just
you
be
know,
able
you're
to
right.
read it out loud and move it, yeah.
You know, you're right, because each and every one of us have a story inside of us.
Oh,
there's
my gosh.
There's something
yeah.
there. You know, whether we're writers or not, there is a story there, you know. And I try to tell people that also. Everybody has a story to tell. It's really sad is when some people do not utilize the God-given talents that they have. That's sad.
Mm-hmm. You know, they feel it. And I really think, like, kind of what you're saying is that if people aren't in touch with or connected with that gift, because we're all born with a gift. We're all, you know, what you're calling your God-given talent. And I call it a gift, and it's inside mm-hmm. each and every one of us, and they all look different. And so many of us are so disconnected to anything that's like in us, that lives inside of us, because
yes.
we're so taught to look outside of ourselves for everything, mm-hmm. you know, for reassurance, for the gold star, for the, you know, from the time we're really little, you know, your answers
yes.
and everything is outside of you. So, you know, it's no wonder mm-hmm. that so many of us go our entire lives with these kind of dreams that kind of well up in us and then kind of get mm-hmm. squashed because we're not mm-hmm. taught to look inside and go with what's inside of us. So I mm-hmm. I think that can be very sad too. Yeah, I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, by our conversation here, I can see that you are a motivational speaker.
I do that on a regular basis. I'm out there talking about this stuff, and really what I love to talk about and my passion is to motivate people about, mm-hmm. and I kind of touched on it a little because I can't help because it's my soapbox. I carry around this soapbox with me.
Okay.
And it's the one I step up on, and it's all about getting connected with your internal guidance, because every one of us were born, like if we got connected with that knowing inside of us, our lives would be easy. We would know what our next step was. We would feel confident mm-hmm. about it. There wouldn't be so much doubt and insecurity because, again, like I said, we're looking outside of us. So that is what I talk about most of the time because I'm like, I'm telling you, this world would change if we all got more connected with the knowing inside of us rather than,
yeah.
you know, keep pulling information from other people who don't know us, you know?
And God would play such a big part in all of that. Do you think?
I think that is the, you know, and again, I call that knowing God, and you know, I know a lot of people do, but some people don't. And if you call it God, it's the whole deal. Do you know what I mean? It's like if
yeah.
you were just able to connect and hear that knowing from inside, God talks to us all the time, all the time. It's just that we're not taught to listen, you know? We're not taught to listen.
Recently, I wrote a book called Jesus Christ Returns. And when I wrote the book, I didn't know if I actually believed in God. I just, you know, just made up a story, which I think a lot of people...
Love that.
Go ahead.
No, I said I love that you just did it, you know, anyway, because that's what you were called to be and doing.
I wrote a story. I wrote a very, very epic story. It was an epic story. But this time, instead of Jerusalem, Egypt, or Bethlehem, I gave the setting the United States. It's fiction. What can I say? All right.
that's the idea, right? I get that.
It's fiction. And I just felt people needed God. I felt people needed Jesus. And I felt that, you know, it was just more, they needed more than just the Bible. So I wrote this fictional story giving people something to reach for.
I love that. I love that you did it, and I love that you did it without even, like, knowing whether you believed in God. Because, like, I
exactly.
totally get that. I totally get that.
But you know,
for me too. I totally get that.
But you know what? I had fun writing it. I had so much. I had a blast.
That is so good. And do people? I bet they enjoy reading it. Because you know what? If you have fun writing it, people will enjoy reading it. That is my conviction about writing.
Yeah. Because if you're having fun in what you're doing, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna resonate on those pages.
Exactly. Because it really is more about the energy of the words that are on the page than the words themselves. Because I have seen badly written, like in my opinion, like not easy to read or not the best, you know, beautiful writing. But books go crazy sometimes because it was the energy that people were needing to hear at the time, too. So, you know.
Yeah, I've read a lot of messy books, too, so. And I'm going to tell you something. I get turned off by it. I mean, some of these misspells or grammatically or is not astute. I just get turned off. I try, but it just doesn't resonate.
Well, those are the books where I want people to know that a good editor is worth their weight in gold, because I don't have to
know
everything. And good editor is awesome.
But you know what? I've had writer friends tell me that they went out and, you know, spent a lot of money on these great editors.
Yeah.
And after the book is done, finished, and it's published, you would think that they've wasted their money.
Really?
Yeah, editors, if you think about it, editors are people, okay?
That's for sure. I hope so, anyway. I don't know.
They should be. And they're prone to mistakes and mishaps just like anybody else. And I've read books where authors have, you know, hired editors to work on their book, the editing, and sometimes it's still not as good. I mean, you've heard probably 16 or 17-year-old editors, you know, teenage editors or something, people, you know, try to save money or something like that. But some of the books aren't that good, even with editors. But I'm not putting down all books with editors, okay? Some books,
no,
you know,
I'm sure you're not.
With an editor's touch is great, but some books you might find, you know, not so great.
So you're just saying that they're not the end-all, be-all. It's just that, you know, the book, and some are good and some aren't.
Yeah, in a short-rounded kind of a way. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, but I'm not saying at no cost not to get a good editor. I'm not saying.
Yeah, I loved my editor, and she really did make my book even better than I think I could have done without her. Because you know what I loved? You know what I loved about my editor is that she would read it and then she would ask me questions. You know, like extra things she wanted to know. Do you know what I mean? So it filled the book out.
Yes.
It made it richer. You know, it really, like, from a reader's perspective, she really gave me what she'd want to know. So I could then fill that in and support the reader in having more of that information that they'd want. So that, for me, was just such a gift, because, like, how would I know? Because it's my, you know, my story, it's in my head. I think I'm telling them everything, you know?
Yeah.
And then she's like, "No, I want to know about this." And I'm like, "Oh, okay, I can write that." You know, I write a little more. Yeah, so it was fun in that way. I liked working with her.
Oh, how many books have you written so far?
I have 3 meditation books. A series of meditation books, and I have a series of marriage books. My husband and I for the last 15 years, we've been doing kind of relationship communication seminars and workshops and those kinds of things. So we had written a lot of articles. So we wrote 3 marriage books. And then I have the main text, which is Interviewed by God. So 6-7 books altogether.
Okay. So what makes a good marriage?
What makes a good marriage? Oh my gosh, so many different pieces. But I think you want to know what I think more than anything. My number one suggestion is stop making things mean so much. You know, we hear somebody say something and we make it mean it about us. You're, you know, my husband I mean, and this used to happen to us. So, like, I get it, you know, until we figured these things out. You know, he would say something, I'm trying to think of an example. You know, oh, the dishes are, you know, after I get done washing them, you go, oh, this one's dirty, you know. And, like, I made that mean that I'm no good at washing dishes. But really what that means is that he likes them cleaner than I do. That's all that means. It's not about me. But see, when you make everything mean something about you, then you start getting defensive. And when you're defensive,
yeah,
there can be no connection. There can be no love when you're defensive. So if you can always see anything the other person says or does that it means something about them, just something they care about, something they value, something that's important to them, then you can let the defensiveness go and just be present to what's about them. Now, I don't have to wash the dishes any different, but I'm not all defensive about it. And I can just see what's important to him, and then we can figure things out from there. But if I go, well, if you don't, and this is what I would used to do, I'd go, you know, if you don't like the way I wash the dishes, do them yourself. And I'd leave, you know. But like, you don't have to do that, you know, but you don't have to do that because it's about him, you know. Then you can just relax and just enjoy each other. Wow, he likes clean dishes, you know.
so do I, you know.
Well, I thought they were clean, but, you know, different strokes, as they say, you know. But that's probably
different
my biggest, folks. That's probably my biggest tip is stop taking everything personally.
Do you think finances play a big part in a relationship?
I think that people, finances just play a really big part in all our lives. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like we in this society and in so many cultures, you know, money is, you know, it becomes just kind of the basis of our lives if we let it. So, and of course, we have to live. So unless, you know, it's the idea that if our basic needs aren't met, then we're always scrambling and like in fear, do you know? So our finances, you know, one of the biggest challenges in relationships, well, it's just one of the biggest challenges. So to manage you know, how you are in relation to money. I could go on and on and on about money and how we perceive it and different ways in which we could start looking at money for it to be different. But in relation to money and like kind of a man, woman or couple relationship, you know, it's always easier if you have the same kind of way you deal with money. It's the same thing as if, you know, if you find a partner that you have the same cleanliness habits. It's just easier, you know. It's the same thing with money. If you have the same kind of habits around money, it's just easier. But people don't ask those questions before they get into relationship, you know. And so then
they sure don't. You know why? Because I didn't ask them. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why one of my relationships was went down the toilet because of finances, you know. And our finances weren't that bad off. It's just that everybody was trying to hide money from each other, and
you just dealt with them different than each other.
You just dealt with it differently. Uh-huh. And finances, they do play a big part in some relationships. I mean, it's almost without question, you know.
Well, you know, finances play such a big part in our lives. Do you know?
Yeah.
In our lives, it's like just start looking at the way we play with money differently. You know, I actually have a whole section in my book about money, and because my parents, oh my God, they fought about money that I can't. From it's like the background noise in my childhood memories, you know, is them fighting about money constantly. And so, you know, I grew up, and so many of us grew up thinking, you know, that we weren't worth, you know, like our worth was really all caught up in this idea of money. I mean, I talk to so many people and it's the same thing because, you know, we were grown up we were all brought up in a really scarcity, like, it's like we got to hang on to it. Like you were saying, we got to hide it from each other and don't talk about it. And I mean, money is this crazy, crazy thing.
Yeah.
And I started this whole tithing practice, which shifted how I feel about money. And do you want to hear what it is?
Go right ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, normally tithing, you know, is related to kind of religious institutions, and you tithe to where you are spiritually fed and those kind of things. And most people give 10% or, you know, something like that. And so I started what I call spontaneous tithing.
Yes.
So I take, like, you know, and you can be any amount of money. I tried to make it a stretch. So when I gave it away, it was like something like a real chunk of money. So I would go around with $20 bills. For me, that was that little bit of stretch. And so I would look for things that touched, moved, or inspired me. So when someone did something or said something or something happened that I was touched by or inspired by, I'd go up to those people and I'd give them the money, the $20 bill, and I'd let them know exactly what they did that touched me and give them the money and tell them that this is my tithing practice. So, oh my God, it is the most beautiful connection I have ever had with strangers. It's like,
wow.
So I've done things like I've gone up to, you know, a waiter that was just so kind to someone, you know, and I gave them money. Or there was this guy in a restaurant and the waiter spilled water all over him. And he was so, just so sweet to the guy, you know, the waiter. And I went up to him and I told him why I was giving him this money. And he was so touched. People get flustered. They get it because you're giving them money for just being themselves, for just being themselves.
Yes.
And it's such a beautiful connection. And I'm watching this. And so it really changes the whole experience of money. You know, it's like money was moved with love rather than fear, because fear is usually the energy in which money is moved around. Do you know, it's like we're paying. Oh my God, do I have enough to pay my bills? And, you know, I'm not getting paid enough, and you know all that stuff. But if if you can give money to someone, a stranger, for just something beautiful they did, I'm telling you, it is such an amazing experience, So I recommend
it
highly.
I believe it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Beth Banning on the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Beth, do you have any final words you'd like to say? Tell us where we can find your book and tell us where your website and all that kind of thing so people can know those things.
Sure. So you can find my book at Beth Banning. Well, you can find the book anywhere, Amazon, your local bookstore. It's called Interviewed by God. But if you'd like to hop on over to my website, which is BethBanning.com, I've got all kinds of freebies. You know that interview process I was talking about? I have a whole I have a whole thing on there that will teach you how to do it yourself. I've got God Notes, where God will text you every day with a cute little love note. So these are all little freebies that I have on my website just so you can get to know me and my book. And then I also have a really cool special that if you buy my book, you get a 3-part video series about how to connect with your inner guidance. And that's just free for buying my book. So that's
how. Wow, www.bethbanning.com.
There you go. Fun talking to you, George.
Hey, would you like a link of this show so you can maybe put it on your website?
Yeah, please. Thanks.
Yeah, I can send you that once, and maybe in about an hour or, you know, something like that, because the show has to process. And I will send you a link to the show, and you can put it on your website for your friends and fans. And I want to suggest everybody out there, go get this book. It's available everywhere.
It is available everywhere.
All right, Beth, thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, everybody.
Banning on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, we're going to take a break right here, folks. I will be right back. Thank you so much. All right, welcome back. This is your host, George Wilder Jr. on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And I've just been handed something that says, do not open your doors. And when I say do not open your doors, I'm talking about seniors. Be careful I just got something stuck in my throat. Be careful. Answer the door. I mean, there's so much of this crime all over the news where seniors open their doors to someone they don't know and they get the hell beat out of them. They get robbed. This is happening all the time. Never, ever go to your door and open it for strangers. You don't know who's on the other side. This was the latest incident that happened in Chicago. I mean, a senior went to the door of his house. Somebody knocked on the door. He went to the door. They broke in and just beat him to submission. He's now in the hospital awaiting surgery, all because he opened his door to strangers. It's a sad sight to see the guy land up in the hospital bed, bandaged from just about head to toe. So seniors out there, do not open your door to people you don't know. Someone on the other side of your door, you don't know. Somebody is bound to knock on your door. But if you're not expecting them, if they're not calling and saying who they are, you have no clue who these people are. Do not open that door. Talk to them from the other side. Talk to them while your door is closed. Your life will depend on it. Do not open up your doors for people you do not know. Seniors are, you really have to hammer it home to some of our seniors, because that's the first thing they're going to do. Some seniors are lonely. They're, of course, they live alone. They're craving human contact or company or to be with someone, so they go to open their door. That's not the way to do it. That's not the way to do it. If someone's knocking on your door, you don't know who they are. Of course, if the police or the fire department is knocking on your door, you have a way to look through the peephole or the viewfinder or whatever. But anyway, if they were knocking on your door, they'd probably contact you first. Or you can look out the window and see who's knocking on your door if that's possible. Or just ask, who is it? What do you want? With your door closed, from behind your door. Do not open your door. Period. Even if someone says that they are a police officer or a reader meter or whatever, because it's the person behind the person who's knocking on your door, they could be lying. Seniors, do not go to your door and open your door unless you know who it is, unless you are expecting these people. If not, do not open that door. And if you do, and they have to show you some ID. So, you know, I just hate hearing that a senior was beaten almost to death where his face is disfigured because he went and opened his door to people he did not know. And they wind up beating him to death and robbing his house, taking guns and money. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, and I'm talking about saving our seniors, because so many of our seniors, 347-857-1762, so many of our seniors open doors of their homes, and they wind up losing their lives because of it, because of it. All right, I'm looking at Jaya Kalamini, if I pronounce her name okay. She was on my show. She's a wonderful person. She's got so many friends, 237 people, including myself, that's been clicking like on her Facebook page. Wow, this is a wonderful lady. And I'm so glad she's a friend. I'm so glad she's been on the show a number of times, and she can always come back on my show because she's such a promoter. She promotes the show like nothing. And she's wonderful. She's great. She's wonderful. And I wish her all the luck in the world at what she's doing. She's a humanitarian. She's an advocate. She's a tireless worker for the average person, the poor, the middle class. And she is one of the greatest award winners there is. And like I said before, I'm proud that we are friends, and she'll probably be back on the show again. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. And I was just talking about senior abuse, and I've written a story called Elder Abuse and the Old Man, which will be published in the coming week. I hope people look out for that. And here is a clip that I'm going to play on elder abuse.
My name is Carol Howell, and I'm with UC Davis Center for Healthy Aging, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Mosqueda. She is the Chief of Geriatrics at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and she's a professor of family medicine and holds the Ronald W. Reagan Endowed Chair in Geriatrics. She sees patients at the UC Irvine Senior Health Center and participates in research and education as well. And her topic today is on elder abuse.
Thanks, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this important topic of elder abuse. It's going to be a challenging topic, though. This is something that we don't talk about very often, and I think we really need to start challenging everybody in our society to think about this issue of elder abuse and understand it a little bit more. It's challenging in a number of different ways. I want people to imagine what it's like in terms of what elder abuse really is, to really ponder what it means to people, to take it beyond just the fact that, oh, that's a real shame that this occurs in our society, but to understand it as the trauma it really is to the people who are directly affected by it and everybody who loves them. I want you to acknowledge that this really exists, and I'm going to prove it to you as we talk today. And I want you to believe two things. I want you to believe that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be a perpetrator. And this, I think, is particularly challenging for us to really understand and take in. Well, what do we mean when we talk about elder abuse? There are a variety of categories of elder abuse as defined in state law in California, and I have them listed here on the screen: physical, sexual, financial abuse, neglect by other people towards somebody, neglecting yourself, issues of abandonment and abduction where people are actually taken across state lines, and psychological abuse. All of these types of abuse that I've just mentioned are reportable abuse. In other words, we are required, many of us, to report these to the state if we have a suspicion, although psychological abuse or emotional abuse is an optional report. We're going to focus in on the topic of physical abuse, neglect, and some issues related to sexual abuse as well. I'm going to go through a few examples, and unfortunately I have to tell you that these examples are based on real cases that I have been involved in. Here's an example of financial abuse. A 55-year-old woman who threatens her mother, if you don't sign on the dotted line to pay for my car, you're going to go into a nursing home. Another example, a 30-year-old man who befriends a widow. She's lonely, she's depressed, she lost her husband less than a year ago. And what people who are sort of predators will often do is find a hole, a gap, an emotional need somebody has, and fill that. And what does he do? He obtains the password for her ATM card and offers to help her buy groceries. And then he also helps himself to cash so that he has some for his own spending to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over a period of a year. Examples of physical abuse: pulling somebody's hair, in fact, dragging somebody by their hair across a carpet, throwing food or objects at somebody, denying access to pain medication, slapping, hitting, punching. A recent case I'm involved in involves a 16-year-old girl who was punching her grandmother in the face. These are the sad realities of what's going on. One of the more hidden types of abuse that I'd like to bring to your attention has to do with neglect. And before I give you some examples of neglect, I think it deserves a little bit of an explanation. When we talk about neglect, we're talking about a relationship, somebody who has assumed responsibility or care and custody for another individual who's unable to care for themselves. And when this person who has assumed this responsibility does not provide appropriate care, such as basics, food, clothing, and shelter, medical care, making sure the person's hygiene is reasonably taken care of, looking after things like health and safety hazards, when these things are not attended to in a reasonable way, we call this neglect. Here are some of the examples that I've seen. People who are lying in urine and feces, and I don't just mean a dirty diaper for a few minutes here or there. I mean people who are lying in their own urine and feces for hours, days, weeks at a time. People who have very elongated, filthy nails, matted hair, living in filthy conditions. People who are not fed or given fluids and they become malnourished and dehydrated. It's not good enough for somebody who's unable to get around to just leave some food at the bedside if they can't reach for it and feed themselves. People who develop deep open wounds that we call pressure sores, sometimes all the way down to their bones, because no one has repositioned them and they're unable to move on their own. These are some examples of neglect that we see. Well, how common is this problem of elder abuse? It's a great question, but it's a very hard one to answer. As you can imagine, it's hard to just knock on somebody's door and say, is anybody abusing grandma? So the question then becomes, how do we figure out how common a problem it is? We also need to understand that there are some difficulties in establishing abuse related to people's reluctance to even admit it's occurring. Not only can we not knock on the door to ask if anybody's abusing grandma, but grandma might not want to tell us if there's abuse going on. She might be ashamed that her own grandson is doing this to her. Many older adults fear losing their independence and, in fact, would rather remain at home in an abusive situation than go to a facility such as a nursing home. Again, a very sad reality. And unlike children, older adults can just sort of fade quietly away in our society and nobody thinks about it, nobody questions it. With kids, if they don't show up at school, we wonder what has happened to them. But we're very accepting of older adults sort of disappearing, oh, they got sick and you never see them again. So it's hard to know really what's going on sometimes. People who are being abused might be so incapacitated physically, cognitively, emotionally, that they're unable to even report that they're being abused. So people might be too incapacitated to report, but the other thing that sometimes occur is that signs of abuse may be missed or mistaken for usual aging. After all, it's pretty common to have bruises as we get older. It's not uncommon to have a hip fracture, and so it can be really difficult to tell whether or not some of these injuries were a result of abuse or just something that happened by mistake. So I'm going to give you our best guess or guesstimate in terms of how common abuse is, but we also want to recognize that it probably is an underestimate. The best study we have so far is called the National Elder Abuse Incident Study, published 10 years ago now, 1998, where there was some attempt to quantify the problem. And this is what they found, is that in a one-year period, there were 236,000 reports of seniors abused at home and 50,000 reports of abuse in nursing homes. I want you to really pay attention to this because one of the common myths is that abuse occurs in nursing homes and it's really not an issue in society, when the reality is that the vast majority of abuse occurs in private homes and the most common perpetrator is a family member. What did they learn? Well, not only do you have 236,000 reports of abuse in the community, 50,000 in nursing homes, but for every report of abuse, at least five. Some people think maybe triple that. Go unreported. So when you look at the numbers, you're talking about at least a million older adults in 1998 victims of abuse. This is a big problem. So what happens now when we start projecting out in terms of numbers of older adults who live in the United States? And let's take a look at a graph for just a moment to examine this issue. You can see that the number of people over the age of 65, of course, is rising at a very, very rapid rate. One of the wonderful things now is that our life expectancies have gone up in a very dramatic fashion in just the past 100 years. But pay attention in particular to this red line, people who are 85 and over. They are the most rapidly growing segment of our society in the United States. Their numbers of people over the age of 85 are growing at an exponential rate. Look at the way the number takes off after the year 2030, and that's not very far off. Why do we have a special category for elders? I mean, in California, the law is that after the age of 65 is when we call something elder abuse. Does that mean it's okay to abuse somebody when they're 64 and then on their birthday at 65 it becomes criminal? Well, the reason we really talk about this special category for elders is that as we grow older, we do become more vulnerable to mistreatment. And so it just becomes a practical matter to have kind of an age cutoff for it, which I think is a reasonable way to go. What are some of these vulnerabilities? Well, as we grow older, it might be harder to defend ourselves from being abused. It might be harder to defend yourself from somebody coming at you with a blow. So it might be harder physically to defend yourself. And certainly emotionally, it might be harder to defend yourself against some of the verbal attacks that can be landed at you. You also may be more dependent on others than you have in the past. We're all used to and enjoy being fairly independent creatures. And now if we begin to have some difficulty and we need help with very personal things like dressing, like grooming, like hygiene, all of a sudden there are more people involved in your life, more hands touching you. And again, vulnerabilities increase. There's also this fear that we talked about a few minutes ago, fear of losing your independence if a report is made. So now somebody might really be able to threaten you, sign over the house or I won't let you live in your own home anymore to help you stay in your own home. You'll have to go into a nursing home. Older adults are very susceptible to these sorts of threats, and that's quite easy to imagine. I want to spend just a moment talking to you about dementia as a special issue. I certainly have observed time and time again that people with dementia are particularly vulnerable to elder abuse. Alzheimer's disease, of course, is the most common type of dementia, and we need to recall that dementia is not just memory loss, but loss of other cognitive functions, so that people with a dementia certainly have short-term memory loss, but also have problems with things like judgment, reasoning, insight, language, difficulty comprehending things. And so you can imagine as people go through different stages of dementia, their risk of a...
welcome back. This is George Wilder Jr.'s show, the George Wilder Jr. Show. I've almost gone through an entire show without saying one iota of a word about Donald Trump. And what else can I say is that the Republicans are truly trying to get rid of this guy. They don't want this guy to be the nominee. And I have to say something about Donald Trump because everybody else is talking about him. Right now, they're talking about Donald Trump breaking out. They're talking about Hillary breaking out. And the Republicans do not want Donald Trump as their nominee, but it looks like it looks that way. Mario Rubio is going down. Ted Cruz, I think he's going to hang in there for a little while. Ben Carson has dropped out. Kasich is still hanging in there. Donald Trump is telling Mario Rubio that he should drop out because Donald wants Mario Rubio's supporters. Of course, he wants Kasich supporters. And he wants to go one-on-one with Jess Cruz. And I've said this before, folks. I am more afraid of Ted Cruz than I am of Donald Trump. Now, there was a clip on television, a video of Donald Trump a few years ago saying that he was a Democrat, that he recognized himself as a Democrat. The words were coming out of his mouth that Donald, he himself said that. And this is why Republicans are all over saying that he's not conservative enough or he's not conservative at all. And I'm not the only one who's saying that they are more afraid of Donald Trump, more afraid of Ted Cruz than they are of Donald Trump. Ted Cruz is the dangerous guy. He get a hold of this presidency, which he is totally unqualified for because he was born in Canada. He's going to wreck everything. Nobody in Canada, nobody in the U.S. Congress likes Ted Cruz. So by him being so unlikable, even if he becomes president, if they let him, he's going to have a hard go of it, especially if he gets a Democratic Congress. So it's up in the air, folks. People, I mean, on the Republican side, Hillary gets it. I'll vote for her. Bernie Sanders, if he wins the nomination, I will vote for him. I am so sick of this presidential contest so far, folks. I could puke. I am really tired of it. And I believe you kind of hear it in my voice. Let it be over already. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago, the great state of Illinois. It is beautiful. It is wonderful. It's winter-like. It is more like spring. But we're not complaining. Nobody's complaining. This is some great weather we're having here in Chicago. And from my understanding, it's going to continue all week. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Talk Radio. Follow me right here. Follow me on Amazon.com. I've got a lot of work up there, and it's good stuff, I've been told. And if you can, if you want to, leave a review after you download a novel, a short story, essays, whatever you want to do, but leave a review and read the stuff. It's great stuff. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's about 24 seconds left into the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. Goodbye, everybody. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.